I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is Journalistically Speaking. Four big topics that we're going to hit today. You ready? The president of the United States has decided in no uncertain terms that he's telling Ukraine, that's it, cutting you off. No more aid to Ukraine. This is huge. Reasons for it, we're going to discuss that. By the way, here's another topic we're going to talk about. There's this grotesque gesture that has been used against President Trump. It looks like it might come either from Mr. Zelensky or somebody who's a part of Mr. Zelensky's team. We don't know, but it is grotesque. And I'm going to show it to you, and we're going to talk about that as well. Then we're going to talk about Marco Rubio. Secretary of State Rubio has told Europe exactly why we are no longer playing along with Zelensky, and it has to do with a calendar year date. And we're gonna take you through exactly what he says. And then the suit question when it comes to Zelensky. Why doesn't the guy want to wear a suit? And most of the time, I think people have said, okay, fine, he's not into suits. Maybe he's just weird body. He's too short, doesn't look good in a suit. Whatever. A man should wear what he wants to wear. But there's something about walking into the Oval Office and not wearing a suit that just seemed wrong. And not a lot has been paid attention to when it comes to this particular issue on that day, because everybody was talking about the fight between the brouhaha between the vice president, the president, and Mr. Zelensky. But he was specifically asked the question about this, and he gives a specific answer, and we're going to try and take that apart. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Let's get started. So as we've heard, the New York Times and CNN and all the mainstream medias ran with this story yesterday. It was out there probably the day before, so it usually takes them about 24 hours to catch up to real news, oftentimes because they got to check with their minders to make sure it's okay to report it. President Trump has decided to, the word they're using is pause, the money that is being sent to Ukraine. It seems obvious at this point that Mr. Trump is not comfortable with the idea of Zelensky continuing the war only using funding from the United States. In other words, what Mr. Trump seems to be saying, and I'm about to ask my very esteemed guest about this, is if giving you money means continuing the war, then this war will never end as long as I continue to give you money, right? That's a logical enthymeme. It's an enthymeme. In other words, A equals B, B equals C, right? And that's what Mr. Trump is deducing. And that's why he's coming out today and essentially saying, that's it. We're cutting off the funding for Ukraine. So let's get into it. Joining me now is Garland Nixon. You know, Garland and I have been working together for many years. I have incredible amounts of respect for Garland and what he does. He's a veteran political analyst. He's the real thing. You can find him at Garland Nixon. That's his channel on YouTube. And of course, he's very popular on YouTube, much more popular than I am. So I'm honored to have him here with us today to talk about this. Let's start there. So Trump comes out yesterday afternoon and makes this decision, as reported, that he is no longer going to fund Ukraine. What sayeth you?
Well, a couple of things. I will hearken back to my days as an investigator in police and law enforcement and do a little bit of statement analysis. I think it's critical to understand that there was a standard set before, because what the Trump administration said was, this is a pause, but they set a standard for what would be necessary to go back to weapons. And they said, until the president says, until we see, visually, until we see a good faith commitment to peace. See, we want to see actions. So C implies we need actions that show not just a commitment to peace, a good faith commitment to peace from the leaders of Ukraine, which says not just you, Zelensky, your leadership. We want to see your leadership act in a way that shows a good faith commitment to Ukraine. When you understand what they were really saying, that's powerful. And in my opinion, that says that they can never start sending weapons again, because the leadership of Ukraine will not show a good faith commitment to peace, because they don't have a good faith commitment to peace.
But let's go back to the point I tried to make, this logical argument. If you agree that it's logical, that Mr. Trump seems to be saying to Mr. Zelensky is, if I keep giving you weapons and money, you are going to continue fighting. Which means, as long as I'm giving you weapons and money, this war will never end. I want the war to end. You don't. Therefore, I cannot continue to give you money. Isn't that what it's really all about?
Yes.
Or am I oversimplifying it?
No. What you're saying is, it's a perfectly logical statement. What the president is saying is, my actions are working against the outcome that I want. I want peace. I'm giving you this, and you won't work for peace as long as I'm doing this. And he could visually see that, because the man had, he wouldn't, you know, wasn't thankful. He was pushing back. He gets angry when he doesn't get what he wants, like a petulant child. So it was perfectly logical. Basically, Trump was saying, I'm fueling the thing that I don't want, and I'm going to stop doing that.
See, that's where I agree with you, and I see the logic in this. Look, there's a lot of things that Trump has done over the years where I have not seen the logic, but I definitely see the logic in this case. Unlike what the New York Times, for example, is reporting, I happened to be listening to their podcast yesterday, and I heard their so-called Ukraine reporter correspondent saying that the only reason Trump is doing all of this anti-Ukraine measures is because he is angry at Ukraine, kind of hates Ukraine for what they've done to him politically in the past. I think that's bullshit. I think they're trying to say that Trump has some kind of vendetta, and that's the only reason he's doing this. That's why I think it's important for people like you and I and others to spell out the logic behind what's going on here, that most of us have been against never-ending wars for the longest time, especially those of us who look at this from a conservative perspective nowadays, more than from a liberal perspective. And that's exactly what this is turning into, a never-ending war. Right, Garland?
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're talking from this. We're talking about this. We're discussing this from the perspective of real politics. What's happening in the real world? Who has the power? Who doesn't have the power? Who wants actions? The New York Times is still caught up in this neocon version of the world where everybody only acts on emotions. Putin's, and how many stories have we read? Oh, Putin's angry now, therefore he's going to do that. Putin's unhappy. We can't make Putin happy about this, sad, upset. And now, well, Trump only does this, that because of emotion. So what they do is they create a straw man. He's only doing this for this reason. And then they just discuss right. The straw man, and they don't have to dig into the reality that we as professionals try our best. Do we miss it sometimes? Yes. But when we miss it, it's because we're trying to honestly evaluate the material effects of the kinetic actions. I hate to sound like a robot, but you know what I'm saying? Actions on the battlefield decide this.
So let's talk a little bit, though, about the personal aspect to this, because there is a personal aspect to this. In fact, there's a personal aspect to everything, even in politics and in geopolitics and relationships amongst different world leaders. In fact, one of the refreshing things that I see about Donald Trump is he's okay sharing oftentimes what he thinks, what he feels, and what he wants, where in the past, we were usually fed this sterile statement that comes from the White House or the State Department and didn't get the reality of what was going on. I'll give you a quick example of that, not to drone on about this. Trump says, I think it would be great for us to get Greenland, and I think Greenland would be good as an asset for the United States. In the past, that would have been something that the CIA and the State Department and the USAID folks would have eventually endeavored to do in the background, and you would never even have heard it said. Whereas in Trump, with Trump, he just says it. And you know what? I appreciate that transparency. We haven't had transparency in this country when it comes to these kinds of things for 30, 40, 50 years.
I think that's one of the things that attracts people to Donald Trump is he comes across as genuine. Whether you agree with him or not, he's going to lay his cards on the table. And he'll even admit sometimes they'll ask him a question. He'll say, if I told you that, I couldn't get a deal. Well, I can't come out and say that. So you even understand that sometimes he's being genuine, but also he kind of will come out and say, yeah, there's times that I have to play verbal games, but it's in the course of getting a deal. So he comes across as a regular person who's based on what people understand. You're the president. You're always working deals. You got to play these games, but we get it. And let me add this. And then we can discuss. Well, I don't think that's a good idea. I do think that's a good idea. We can mobilize against it. We're going to put this movement together, the fight against it, but at least we know it's there. That's democracy, isn't it?
Let me show you something. Speaking of this personal thing that sometimes happens amongst different leaders, and look, let's not deny the fact that there is something personal between Mr. Trump and Mr. Zelensky. It's gotten that way. I would argue that it's even more personal for Zelensky than for Trump. And let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Take a look at this picture. See that? That's a piano, right? But it has Trump's name on it. Now, this has been released in Kyiv as some kind of statement, which was perplexing at first, as most people were wondering, why is Zelensky or Zelensky's crew, for lack thereof, of a specific title or blame on someone, why are they putting this out there? Piano with Mr. Trump's picture on it, right? Okay, let me tell you why. And this is how it's being explained. And this is somewhat grotesque. And is it a statement that Mr. Zelensky is sending to Mr. Trump? If so, it seems to be rather insulting and rather grotesque. When Mr. Zelensky, prior to Mr. Zelensky becoming the president of Ukraine, which, by the way, he's no longer the president because he hasn't been elected. He's right now just a strongman of Ukraine. Before that, he was a comedian, a very popular comedian, so popular that that's what led him to the presidency. And there was one particular time when he did one particular act with a piano, which to this day people talk about and remember. And I guess if you're in Ukraine, it's one of those hallmark moments where people say, oh my God, this guy's so funny. Remember the time he did this with a piano? All right, I'm going to show you what Mr. Zelensky did with the piano. Here it is. Now, as you can see in that video, he's playing the piano with his privates. In the moment, I suppose, for that auditorium filled with people, as you can see, they're all shucking it up and they thought it was very funny. But the message is he's kind of doing something to the piano. Now he releases a piano with a name Donald Trump on it. What's the message that is he's sending? And is it a little too crude for a head of state to be doing something like that? Did it come from him or did it come from somebody surrounding him or his people? That's the question being asked. And has that gotten to Donald Trump? And has he seen it? And is that perhaps what's enlivening this feud between these two men? To you, Garland.
I think that's one of the reasons that the Trump administration specifically said, until we see a good faith commitment to peace from the leaders of Ukraine, I think he understands that he's dealing with people who are unprofessional, who are immature, and who are not able to present themselves professionally on the international geopolitical stage.
I was talking to Colonel Douglas McGregor the other day, your nation, your vote. And he's a very wise man, and he's really smart. And he said something to me about that, similar to what you said, but he went even further. He alluded to the fact that he thinks that Zelensky has a cocaine problem. And since then, I've done a lot of research, as much research as I can do, trying to nail it down. And to be fair to Mr. Zelensky, I was not able in any way to nail down that he definitively has a cocaine problem, other than a series of memes and videos out there that show him doing, or purportedly show him doing, a lot of things. He's always touching his nose and doing all this stuff. That doesn't mean somebody has a cocaine problem. But, you know, there's a lot of commentary about whether his state of mind is in the right place, be it from drugs or anything else. What do you make of that?
Well, it does appear, to be frank, that his ability to maintain professionalism has deteriorated over the course of the last few years. We do know that people have addiction problems, that have addiction problems when they're placed under stress, the addiction will dramatically increase. So it certainly makes sense. And you know, where there's this much smoke, there's got to be fire. I mean, you hear it from all angles about his cocaine addiction problem. I find it hard to believe that you hear this much about it for this long period of time, and that there's no there. It certainly seems, I would wager that there's, you know, that he probably has some kind of an addiction issue.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. I've got another piece of video I want to show you. This is interesting, and I'm putting this a little bit out of order just to let my producers know. During that eruption in the Oval Office between Vice President Vance, President Trump, and Mr. Zelensky, just prior to that, they had taken some questions, and a reporter asked Mr. Zelensky what he was doing in the Oval Office in particular, because we know the guy doesn't like to wear a suit, but it was, there's something different about being in the Oval Office without a suit. So here's Zelensky standing, sitting next to Mr. Trump and Mr. Vance. Both of them are wearing their, you know, official, you know, their, you know, navy blue suits with their red ties. And then there's this guy wearing a, you know, basically
a janitor's uniform.
Yeah.
It just needs to have a little tag that says, "Hi, my name is, you know, V. Zelensky, can I help you," or something.
They're the sweatshirts that I wear when I go to sleep at night, when my wife, who for some reason suddenly likes the really cold in our room, so I have to wear a sweatshirt. And it looks like that sweatshirt that I wear. It's like my favorite old, you know, sweatshirt. But
looks like he should have a leaf blower in his hand or something when he's doing that.
to the point that you were just making about his attitude, his combative attitude, or his personality change recently, whatever it is. Listen to the question and answer between him and the guy who asked him about his not wearing a suit. Go.
Well, ended up in a third world war, and that would not have been a good situation. What was your second question?
My second question for President Zelensky. No. Why don't you wear a suit? Why don't you wear a suit? You're the highest level in this country's office, and you refuse to wear a suit. Just want to see if you do own a suit?
Yeah, yeah, problems.
A lot of Americans have problems with you not
really
respecting.
I don't have such. I will wear a costume after this war will finish.
Okay.
Yes, maybe one.
Maybe something like yours.
Yes. Yes. Maybe something better. I don't know. We will see. Maybe something cheaper than. Yeah. Thank you.
President Trump. President Trump, you said yesterday. Thank you.
Now, notice that. Usually in that situation, it would have been easy, I think. And what most people would do is say, you know, perhaps you're right. I didn't wear a suit. Maybe I should have. I made a promise several years ago to my people when the war started that I would wear this, and I've worn it ever since. And I'm so sorry. I feel bad that, you know, you're affected by that or insulted by that in any way. I hope people don't take it the wrong way. That's what I would have said. That's what most people would say. Instead, he starts a fight with the guy. Oh, maybe I should wear a suit as nice as yours. Maybe you can afford that suit. Maybe I shouldn't wear a suit. But it just was, it got so ugly so fast. I mean, and I thought to myself, what the hell is with, why does he fight all the time when he's meeting with people who have given him $200 billion frickin' dollars?
Well, yeah, he does come across as unhinged and combative. Let's not forget that I believe he met with, I believe it was France a month or so ago, that he met with the Trump team, and he had on the janitor's uniform then. And they, at that point, comments were made to him that it was found to be unprofessional. As we know, we're grown men, we understand, particularly yeah. in politics, there is a uniform. I once had my political mentor said to me, he said, look at Malcolm X. Look at Martin Luther King. You always saw those guys with a suit and tie on. Why? Because yeah. they understood that the uniform of power, the uniform of professionalism and credibility when you're in front of the camera is a suit and tie, a professionalism. You know, Navy, we all know the game, right? But this guy does not understand professionalism. So he comes across really as an amateur. He acts like an amateur. And, you know, quite frankly, the Trump team is tired of dealing with an amateur. And I don't blame him.
You know, it's almost, you know, the expression we've used, I'm sure you've used it, I'm sure your dad has used it on you from time to time, but my dad would with me, don't get too big for your britches.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what we're talking about here? Here's the guy of a country which is in a war with Russia. The only reason he's in a war with Russia is because he's not really fighting that war. Other people are fighting it for him, and they recruited him to be the proxy. But somehow he seems to be acting like he's as big or bigger than Russia and the United States and NATO combined, like he's an equal part. He's not. He's just a country that was selected by NATO and the United States because they were trying to hurt or destroy Russia. That's all he is. I'm not sure he knows that.
Yeah, I think he doesn't understand that this is a proxy war, and the monkey does not decide when the proxy war is over. The organ grinder decides, and he came to the home of the organ grinder, and the organ grinder said, "Monkey, it's over. Get out of here." But
dance, you know, monkey, Biden, dance.
The Biden administration created this monster.
Yes,
propping him up, sending him all over the place. This is not the first time that I've read about leaders of various countries in the EU upset with him and some of his surrogates who came to their countries demanding more. But they yeah. knew that they had Uncle Joe Biden behind them, that it was going to push whoever didn't do his bidding. Well, those days are over. There's a new sheriff in town, and he's learning the hard way.
That brings us to this important point, and it may be the final part of our conversation, but a very important part of our conversation. And you just mentioned it, Europe. So we're seeing some pushback from Italy, obviously, countries like Hungary. Germany is like falling apart, and there's a huge split there now. Starmer, who seems to be an idiot, is still, you know, fighting World War II, I guess, which makes no sense because he thinks that somehow Russia is Germany when last time I checked, Russia is the reason that the Brits are not marching to Hitler's tune today. But I don't understand how people change history the way they do. But that's the situation. That's where we are right now. Marco Rubio, my buddy here from South Florida, my Cuban compatriot here, has taken it upon himself now to tell, you know, and wagging his finger in Europe's face and saying, guys, no, you're basically saying you want this thing to continue for another year. Yet, we're not going to allow this to continue for another year. In fact, here's Rubio saying that.
I asked people, what is the European plan to end this war? I can tell you what one foreign minister told me, and I'm not going to say who it was, but I can tell you what one of them told me, and that is that the war goes on for another year, and at that point, Russia will feel so weakened that they'll beg for a peace. That's another year of killing, another year of dying, another year of destruction, and by the way, not a very realistic plan in my point of view. So if there's a chance of peace, even if it's a 1% chance, that needs to be explored, and that's what President Trump is trying to do here.
So, yeah, Rubio's gone on all the, you know, Sunday talk shows. He's like the traditionalist in the Trump administration, I guess. And he's telling the Europeans that under no uncertain terms are we going to continue to let this thing go for another year. The Europeans seem to be saying, well, we do want it to go for another year. And they're even intimating this morning, in so far what I have been reading, that they're willing to overfund to make up for what the United States will not fund to keep it going. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, Keir Starmer, I think, is representing a British elite ruling class that are having trouble accepting the reality that they've got, you know, a queen and they've got all the accoutrements of an empire, but they're just a little island. They're not an empire anymore. They're just a little island arguing with France over fishing rights in the English Channel. That's about the best they can do. So they're having trouble. I mean, we're talking like 500 years, and now finally the reality is they got to face the truth. No, they're nobody on the international stage. They're having trouble struggling with it. But I think the time will come when now that the U.S. is out of the way, even if they can put together money, they can't physically build the weapons to send to Ukraine. They can send them bags of money, but you can't fire bags of money out of an artillery piece.
So what happens now then, Garland? I mean, if Ukraine, Zelensky, / Zelensky, don't have the funding from the United States, what happens in this war? How long before this thing ends? How long do you think, from your reading of the situation, can Ukraine hold out?
Well, it depends on how many weapons they have. But I also think that, you know, there was a meeting of the Ukrainian parliament, the Rada, where they tried to backtrack a bit and say, oh, well, we're sorry, Trump, we can work with you, blah, blah, blah. But that's not going to do any good. I think internally, we're looking at some kind of a collapse, political collapse, military collapse. I mean, who on the front line now wants to be the last person who fires the last round and says, okay, how we fix for ammunition? We're out. And now, one other thing, I think the Trump administration purposely, they have one more card to play. They haven't yanked Starlink yet. And people are saying, well, why didn't they do that? Here's what I think. Because if you're bargaining, you always want to keep one more chip. So they've got one more chip that they can use for the Ukrainians. If they really get, you know, a little too froggy, they can say, well, don't force us. We'll jump one more. So at some point, I think Trump's going to play that card on them because they can't communicate any outside of at a company level once Starlink's gone. So the question is, when does that card get played by the Trump administration? I say within weeks.
That's fascinating. Starlink. You mean
the communication? Yes.
I was going to say, you mean the one owned by the richest man in the world, who happens to be also, according to many people, running most of the White House these days?
Exactly. That's the final card. But I think the Trump administration, they're probably waiting for the Ukrainians or the Europeans to do something stupid, which they undoubtedly will. And they'll then yank the rug out from under with communications. And then you're looking at collapse on the battlefield.
I feel so sorry for the Ukrainian people. I feel so sorry for them. They have been used and they have been hosed. And this is terrible, and it's a most dangerous game that Zelensky and I guess his administration or his government is playing, because the longer they wait to sit and negotiate a peace deal, the more territory they are going to lose. And last time I checked, at least the way I've always played sports, the score is the score at the end. And if you lose 60 to 10, you lose 60 to 10. You don't go at the end to sit at the middle of the field with the referees and saying, let's go back to 0-0. No, it's not 0-0. It's 60 to 10 or 70 to 5 or whatever the hell it is. And right now, as I can tell, and according to my sources and, you know, the Sachs and the Mearsheimers and the Ritters and the McGregors and the people who've really studied this thing, this battleground, this theater, you know, they're telling us that Russia's annihilating the Ukrainian army right now. And there's even examples of places where the Ukrainian army is just, you know, running away from the theater altogether. If this continues, just how much territory are they willing to lose? That's why it just makes so much sense for Zelensky to realize, take what you can now and stop, dude. No?
Well, that's the problem. You know, we look at this and discuss it through the lens of a rational person. We're not seeing rational actions. We're seeing people who, here's the reality, you know, if you hate Russians, you don't do this because you want to gain territory or lose it. You have an aversive anxiety that you have to deal with. And so they're doing all these things to deal with this anxiety that they hate Russians. So it's not rational. It's quelling the anxiety, like a person who can't stop eating. They're not eating because they're hungry. They're eating because they're anxious, and the anxiety will never be filled. And the hatred of Russians, whether it's Keir Starmer or the goose-stepping lunatics in Kiev, they can never address that anxiety. And so they can never be rational. So what we're looking at some point is going to be capitulation. These people aren't going to throw in the towel. I'll say this, though. The Ukrainian people, I predict this, they ain't going to be mad at the Russians. They're going to be mad at the Europeans. They're going to be mad at their leaders. And they're going to say, look what you've done to us. Why did we do? And the Europeans are going to say to their leaders, why did we go through all of this economic suffering just for this debacle to happen in the end? Questions will be asked. Yeah, and they need to be.
Yeah. No, they were used. And to be fair, Zelensky ran as a peace candidate. He said, one of my main goals when I become president is to create peace with Russia. And then he got a phone call from Washington and I guess from London. And they said, no. We didn't make you the new president of Ukraine so you could make peace with the Russians. Your job is to do everything possible to infuriate the Russians, to punish the Russians, to weaken the Putin government. And that's the role he ended up playing. And how did we get him to play that role? Oh, some $200 billion, which I guess you and I probably would have done the same thing. I don't know.
I wouldn't.
I've never been offered that kind of money.
I'll put it like this, as Clint Eastwood said in The Outlaw Josie Wales, dying ain't no way to make a living.
What a situation this is. Unbelievable the way this thing is playing out. And, props to the Trump administration. For the first time in my lifetime, I've seen a White House which is pushing back at the administrative state and saying, no, we're not just going to do it the way you've always wanted to do it. We're going to look at another way this time. Hopefully that trend will continue, and let's see if it works this time for the sake of all of us, for the sake of world peace, for the sake of my taxes, which keep getting, used for endless wars. And most of all, to be fair, for the sake of the Ukrainian people. I mean, literally. I mean, the Russians have suffered a lot also, obviously, but they're a big, powerful country. The Ukrainians are not. And for their sake, I hope this thing can come to an end very soon. Garland, final thoughts?
Well, to be frank, and again, both of us may have our issues with Donald Trump, but he said something, one of the most sane things that I've heard a president say in my lifetime. He said, you're playing with nuclear war. You're playing with millions of lives. You're playing with World War III. Not a good idea. And I thought, that's a very respectable thing to say. And my gosh, it feels good to hear someone say something. And I'm like, the last couple of years, none of us were sleeping well. That we were waiting for the missiles to be exploding overhead. And that's not a joke.
No, and it's so amazing to hear so many of our citizenry, fellow American citizens. I mean, I love this country as much as the next guy, but so many of people I know and people in, especially in the Democratic Party and people in Congress, like this guy Crenshaw, for example, who are just cheerleading these wars on, like it's crazy. Like, we need more wars. Let's fight more people and let's send more of your kids over there to die. And let's take $100 billion more of your tax money rather than spend it here to have decent roads and a decent healthcare system, et cetera, while we give these monies to countries that have better healthcare systems and, in many cases, better infrastructure than we do. It is so perplexing.
And do you know the interesting thing? And that is that the same people that make those statements want to shut the mouths of people like us who have a right to say we oppose this and that we want to present alternative information. I just see these people as proto-fascists who say we only want people to hear what we have to say. And everything we say is pro-war, and we must, literally, if they could get away with it, they'd lock us up.
Right.
Luckily
no,
for us, if you they haven't
no,
been able to get
listen,
away with
and,
it.
And it's the same damn pattern every time. Either you're pro-war or you're a Putin apologist, or you're pro-war or you're a communist, Vietnam. Either you're pro-war or you're pro-Saddam, Iraq. either you're pro-war or you're a terrorist.
Yeah, remember that?
It's the same freaking pattern every single time. And it's like, after a while, you have to figure out, wait a minute, this is stupid. I mean, you're calling me a Putin apologist because I don't want my country to spend another $200 billion on a war that most people in the United States can't find on a map and isn't doing any good for the people of the United States? That I'm a Putin apologist for that? Give me a break. I mean, that, and that's, or it was the same case with Vietnam. Oh, then you're, you know, why are we in Vietnam? Why are you asking that question? You must be a communist. What do you mean I must be a communist? What are you talking about? And that's where we are again, you know?
The oversimplification of politics. We want to have a nuanced, intellectual, philosophical discussion of is this the right move? Why should we do it? What is the future? Where is this going to take us? We want to have a broad discussion, and they just want to say, either you're with us, we're the good guys, or you're with them, they're bad guys. Right, that's why I always call these people the knuckle draggers. They want to take us back to caveman days, but the cavemen are smarter than these clowns.
No, it's always an accusation of name calling. You know, if you disagree with giving all this money and continuing the situation, helping Netanyahu, then you're obviously an anti-Semite. No, I'm not an anti-Semite. I'm questioning the foreign policy that we're using in the Middle East. That's what I'm doing. No, you're obviously just an anti-Semite. You know, this is a good place to stop.
They all get their blue and yellow flags on their Facebook or whatever. You know, I stand with Ukraine. And we just like, okay, what's the next one going to be? What the next thing will be a sign for you to put on your social media account for you to stand with? Because whatever it is, we know they'll put it up there.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was born in a communist country, and most of my life, I thought a lot about indoctrination. How is it that a people become indoctrinated? And, you know, it's been funny watching the last 4 years and prior to that, too, to be fair, it wasn't all about Biden. The level of indoctrination in this country has gotten as bad as anything that I think I've seen in any other country, including the communist country that I was born in, Cuba. So, and that's just a fact. That's just the way it is. It hurts to say it, but it's true.
You know, I'll end with this. You know, we traditionally people will say the ultra nationalist when they're talking about fascists or Nazis, the ultra nationalist. What we've had the last few years are the ultra liberals. They are so far, and they're ultra liberals and they're fascists. The ultra liberals are fascists. It's fascist. When you get to the point where you take your ideology to the point where it has to be dominant, totalitarian, and all you want to do is smite your enemies all the time, it becomes irrational. And I think we're looking at what they're literally locking up journalists, locking up people for Facebook posts in Germany. That's fascist stuff as far as I'm concerned. I think the F word is appropriate.
By the way, not for nothing, but if I was to continue working at RT, a journalistic enterprise, by the way, which I generally respect and feel like they gave me more leeway, more independence, and more right over my narrative than I received when I worked at CNN and Fox and NBC and Univision and other places. But right now in this country, I was told by the Biden administration that if I continue working for that enterprise simply because they don't like that enterprise, that I could be put in jail.
Yep.
Think about that. The United States of America telling a journalist that if he practices his craft, he'll be put in jail unless he chooses a different outlet that they approve of. Wow. How screwed up is that?
The F word is appropriate.
I didn't use it, but I came close. Garland Nixon is, one of the best political analysts you can get. You can find him, by the way, at Garland Nixon on YouTube. We are Journalistically Speaking, and that's what we do. I call it JSpeak for short. You can find me, obviously, on YouTube and all the other TikToks and everything else out there. Give us a like. Tell us what you think. Tell me if you think we're full of shit. That's fine, too. And of course, subscribe. We'll see you next time.